primera cuestión planteada a Ken van der Mark, bueno, pues se encontró en Huesca con una multitud de admiradores, ya hemos comentado gente procedente de los lugares más diversos, desde Santander, Albacete, Barcelona, Po, San Sebastián, Pamplona, etcétera, etcétera. ¿Cómo resulta o de qué manera percibe un músico como Ken van der Mark pues ese hecho, ¿no? El llegar a una ciudad tan lejana, a su Chicago habitual de residencia y encontrarse con tantas personas interesadas en su música en un país tan lejano?
It's kind of overwhelming in a way because you know, we've been traveling a lot and doing a lot of touring with the musicians I play with from Chicago and in Europe and other places in the United States, especially for the last few years, last 3 years, and it feels like each time we come back, like coming to Spain now, to have so many people who know the music that we've done and have a lot of the recordings and are familiar with the things that we're doing. For me, I find it really overwhelming that so many people have such interest in what we've been doing in Chicago for a long time. And the music we've been working on with other people outside of Chicago, it's really gratifying because, you know, we get to work a lot at home. And when we leave and we find that the music that we play communicates to people outside of that city, it means a lot. It's kind of taking it out on the road to test it in a way to see if it has relevance outside of our own place that we work. So to be able to tour like this and play to people in a country I've never been to in front of an audience that's never seen us play live and have such a great response is really meaningful for me.
Es un tanto abrumador. Hemos hecho muchas giras con los músicos de Chicago, sobre todo en los últimos 3 años. Y llegar a España y ver que tanta gente conoce nuestra música, nuestros discos, es realmente abrumador. Ver que esa música que nosotros hacemos en Chicago es comprendida afuera significa mucho para nosotros. Es como llevar la música fuera de nuestra casa para comprobarla, para ver si tiene relevancia fuera de nuestro hogar.
La voz de Roberto Barahona. Siguiente cuestión planteada a Ken van der Mark acerca de su falta de popularidad por parte de los grandes aficionados a la música de la libre improvisación, de la creatividad en general. Es un músico realmente admirado, pero posiblemente no conocido por el aficionado medio al jazz e incluso por los propios músicos, por los compañeros de profesión. Razones posibles a esa falta de conocimiento de la figura de Ken van der Mark. Por un lado puede ser el hecho de grabar en sellos discográficos pequeños, por otro lado el hecho de grabar en una ciudad, o mejor dicho de vivir y tocar en una ciudad no tan conocida, no musical como Chicago, con respecto a ciudades como Nueva York. Respuesta de Ken van der Mark.
I think the reason, there's probably a lot of different reasons. I think the two reasons you cited are pretty significant as far as that goes, because all the labels I do work with are small independent labels, most of them centered in the United States, and they don't have very good distribution in Europe. It's difficult to get the records. Although with the internet, that's changing because a lot of people can go directly to the labels and order them from the labels, so that's helped for people like ourselves, you know, like Kent and myself and other people I work with, get the records out. And also, for historically, New York has always been the center of the music, especially in the United States, but also internationally. It's been considered as the capital of jazz. And I think, personally, and this is not to slight the musicians in New York, but I think that, especially in the last 30 years, there's been a real shift to the most creative music happening in jazz or improvised music, however you want to call it. It's shifted internationally much, much more. I mean, all the developments that happened in England in the late 60s, early 70s, with people like Derek Bailey, Evan Parker, or Paul Litton, who played tonight, Tony Oxley, the Dutch guys like Misha Mengelberg, Han Bennig, the German musicians like Peter Koval, Peter Brutzmann, and on. I mean, they really have been developing music that's very, has connections to American jazz, but also stands apart from it, that has an immense amount of creativity and historical significance. And that's true with Chicago, too. I mean, the AACM was developed in the mid-60s and really got, I think, stronger in terms of its concepts and whatnot in the later 60s. And that was really apart from what was happening in New York. So all the work of the early art ensemble, Mulhall, Richard Abrams, all that stuff. And that was centered in Chicago. So there was already a lot of things happening away from New York that had their own history and their own sensibility. So in the mainstream jazz media, though, New York is still talked about and considered as the main place. And I'm not really interested in their perspective, to be blunt about it. I think that they hold on to a history that creatively has kind of reached its end point. I think that there's a lot of creative music happening in jazz, if you want to use that term, or improvised music, if you want to use that term, or whatever term. There's a lot of creative players doing incredible work right now. A lot of them don't get talked about in the mainstream jazz press in the United States, and my impression is that in Europe, that's true too. A lot of festivals are devoted to players that are working off of stuff that's kind of reached its zenith in creativity, I would say, many decades ago, from my own standpoint. And, you know, obviously, there are a lot of people who disagree with me. But if you work outside of that jazz mainstream, they're not going to talk about you, you know. And that's fine with me, because I think that I'm more interested, and I think the people I work with are a lot more interested in doing creative work. And we're improvisers, and we work with people who are improvisers and who are trying to find their own voice and trying to find their own ideas and develop those things. And we're not really concerned with the past. We're affected by it, and we're curious about it, and we study it, but we're trying to find our own thing to say. And I think that's the history of jazz that I personally feel really connected to, is the history of individuals making personal statements in their own time period, as opposed to, like, people trying to play Dixieland in the 50s, you know, when it was developed in the 20s, let's say, you know. And I think that that's going on now, frankly, with musicians, let's say, at the Lincoln Center, trying to work on the music of Duke Ellington, for example. When Duke Ellington played that music better than anybody's going to play it, you know. And so why not? Yeah, right, exactly. There's the records. I mean, it's the evidence is there, you know. And so from my own standpoint, I think it makes more sense to, I feel tied to the tradition of personality, and I'm trying to figure that out for myself, and I don't want to sound like somebody else, you know, even if I'm influenced by them and have been impacted by them. So the fact that, you know, we get overlooked, I don't really care, you know. I think that, I mean, we're doing something right if we can come here on a night like this and play to so many people and play the music we care about. Obviously, someone's finding out about it, and the right people are finding out about it, you know. So as long as I think we can stay committed to what we're doing and keep focused on trying to be creative musicians, which is our job, I think, you know, we'll be fine. We don't need to have front cover photographs on mainstream jazz magazines, because we're not part of that, you know. We're a part of it, and I think we should be, in a way. We're connected to a history that they don't even really write about. I mean, if you, United States and a lot of public radio stations, for example, in Chicago, the public radio station there that plays jazz 40 hours a week, they don't even play John Coltrane and Thelonious Monk and Charlie Parker. They play, like, contemporary people doing pale versions of that music. And it's like, well, screw that. You know, I'm not part of that. I'm part, to me, if I can be so bold, I'd say I'm connected to the work of Thelonious Monk. I'm not saying I'm on the level of him, but his spirit and his creativity and his individuality, that's what I'm connected to. Not people that are trying to do bad versions around midnight in 1999 or in 2003 now. You know, I'm not connected to them at all.
Creo que hay varias razones para explicar esto. Las dos que tú has mencionado son parte de esas razones. La mayoría de sellos para los que grabo son pequeños sellos de Estados Unidos con mala distribución en Europa. Aunque gracias a Internet esto está cambiando. Nos ayuda a vender nuestros discos. Nueva York ha sido históricamente el centro mundial del jazz, pero creo que personalmente, sin despreciar a los músicos de Nueva York, que esto ha cambiado. Especialmente en los últimos 30 años ha ocurrido un gran cambio. La música más creativa es internacional. Todo lo hecho en Inglaterra a fines de los 60 y a principios de los 70, con gente como Derek Bailey, Evan Parker, Paul Litton, Tony Oxley, los holandeses como Michel Mengelberg, Hans Bennink, los alemanes como Peter Brotzmann y más, ellos han desarrollado música conectada con el jazz americano, pero con una gran creatividad y significación histórica. En Chicago pasa lo mismo en los años 80. La AACM, con grupos como el Art Ensemble of Chicago, que en su momento tenía una cierta relación con Nueva York. Ahora todo eso se desarrolla en Chicago. En la prensa se considera a Nueva York como el lugar más importante, incluso en la prensa del jazz. A mí no me interesa. Ellos se agarran una historia cuya creatividad se acabó. Hay mucho jazz o música improvisada de músicos creativos increíble, de los que la prensa especializada, tanto norteamericana como europea, no habla. Incluso los festivales se dedican a programar a aquellos músicos que trabajan sobre una música que tocó ya el techo de su creatividad hace décadas. Si tú trabajas fuera de eso, no hablan de ti. Y eso no me molesta. Me interesa más la gente que quiere ser creativa, improvisadores que buscan su propia voz y desarrollar las ideas. Esa música de la historia, claro que nos interesa, la estudiamos, pero buscamos nuestro propio lenguaje, aquello que queremos decir. Yo me encuentro en conexión con la historia del jazz, la historia de individuos que en cada momento concreto se expresan individualmente, al revés de aquellos que en los años 50 tocaban Dixieland, cuando es una música que se desarrolló en los años 20. Eso sucede ahora con músicos como los de Lincoln Center, que tratan de tocar la música de Duke Ellington. Ellington tocaba su música mejor que nadie, y para eso están los discos. Yo no quiero sonar como otros. Por eso a mí no me importa que no nos hagan caso. Prefiero tocar en una noche como la de hoy para gente a la que verdaderamente le importa tu música. No necesitamos salir en primera página ni fotografías, porque no somos parte de eso, aunque deberíamos serlo. Estamos conectados a una historia de la que ellos ni siquiera escriben. En Estados Unidos, por ejemplo, una emisora pública emite más de 40 horas semanales de música que no es ni Thelonious Monk, ni Charlie Parker, ni Coltrane. Ponen gente contemporánea que imita patéticamente esa música. Yo no soy parte de eso. Yo en realidad creo que estoy conectado a un músico como Monk. No digo que sea tan bueno como él, pero sí que su espíritu de creatividad e individualidad son los que yo busco, no a la gente que hace malas versiones de Round Midnight.
Las reflexiones de Ken van der Mark, que ahora van a girar en torno a esa ciudad donde él nacía, o el entorno de la ciudad donde nacía, que era en Boston, una ciudad que en lo jazzístico pues tenemos una connotación muy clara, que es la Universidad de Berkeley, donde han estado muchos de nuestros propios músicos navarros, en la actualidad el saxofonista, por ejemplo, Miguel Fernández. ¿Por qué un músico como Ken van der Mark de Boston no ha ido a Berkeley? ¿Una diferencia de criterios? ¿Cuál es su opinión sobre Berkeley y creatividad? ¿Dos conceptos quizá antagónicos?
Well, I mean, for me personally, I think it was really good that I didn't go to music school. I was lucky enough to be exposed to a lot of music as a kid growing up in the family I was in. And that was kind of my school in a way. And in general, I'm self-taught. And in general, a lot of the people I play with are self-taught in the best way, that they've tried to find the way to get to what they were hearing in their heads on their own terms, you know. And so they tend to be people who have a lot of individuality in their playing. I find that, I can't speak for the schools in Europe, but the schools that I'm aware of in the United States that I've been exposed to and that I'm aware of, the way that they teach is problematic because they erase the individual in the process of teaching them techniques. And technical ability to me is pointless unless it serves an idea, which means you have to have the ideas directing the development of the techniques. You can't sit in a room and say, well, gee, you know, I need to do this thing without having a purpose behind it. Because otherwise you have a bunch of tricks you can do that are empty and have no kind of, to me, any kind of real meaning. And I think that in a lot of those schools, they teach these correct ways of playing, and they teach these skills without developing the creative aspect of the people who are going there. And I think a lot of people who go to music schools are creative people, you know, and the process of being there for, let's say, 4 years and competing constantly with other musicians who are all being told the same things, who are all being told this is the correct way to do this, this is the correct way to play a blues, or this is the correct way to play these chord changes. I mean, all that's extremely problematic. And I had a Kent and I had a really funny experience when we did a workshop at a music college at a university, and we was with the Vandermark Five, and we did a course, a master class, so to speak, with this the music students, and basically we showed them how we worked on some of our music in the band, and then we opened it up to questions, and there were a lot of interesting questions from the students, and that was cool. But the at the end, the teacher said, well, you know, before we finish, I'd really like to find out what the five of you, you know, what your interaction with music school has been, which was like the worst question he could have asked, because it's like, I never went to music school, you know, and Kent dropped out, and everybody else had dropped out, and then they had gone on to study something else. So the people that had been brought to the school to you know, indicate other ideas in music to these students were basically told them, well, we all failed as music students.
You don't have the paper, you are a musician.
Yeah, that's a crazy idea. I mean, you're a musician or you're not a musician. Having a degree maybe enables you to have a chance to teach as a qualified instructor, but since I'm not interested in that anyway, I think there's more damage done in those situations than help done, because they don't focus on the potential of creative thinking. They just teach skills, because those are things that they can qualify. Like, you can or cannot play a certain series of scales, or you can or cannot play what they, you know. But if your ideas are contrary to public opinion, then what do? Are they going to fail you? Or are they going to, you know, because anyone who's doing something creative is going to be personal, will probably be outside of the boundary lines of what is correct.
Personalmente creo que fue una buena idea no haber ido a una academia de música. Tuve la suerte de escuchar mucha música de niño en casa. Esa fue mi mejor escuela. Soy autodidacta y muchos músicos con los que toco también lo son. Han tratado de buscar el camino hacia donde querían estar. La manera de enseñar de las escuelas que yo conozco de Estados Unidos, de Europa no puedo hablar, es peligrosa, ya que en su proceso de enseñanza borran al individuo. Les enseñan técnica y eso no tiene sentido. La técnica, a no ser que sirva a una idea, no tiene sentido. Tienes que tener las ideas en dirección al desarrollo de las técnicas. No puedes sentarte a pensar, necesito hacer esto sin tener un propósito detrás de él. El malabarismo está vacío, y en las escuelas te enseñan la destreza sin el aspecto creativo de la persona. Mucha gente va a la escuela con creatividad, y el competir con otros músicos, a los que se le enseña la manera correcta de tocar un blues, unos acordes, es problemático. Ken y yo hicimos un curso con los alumnos de música de una universidad. Básicamente les enseñamos cómo trabajamos sobre nuestra música. Al finalizar, el profesor nos preguntó sobre nuestra relación con las escuelas de música, y esa era la peor pregunta que nos podía haber hecho, ya que yo nunca fui a una escuela de música. La gente que han traído a la universidad para relatar sus experiencias básicamente decían que habían sido un fracaso como estudiantes de música. Y eso es una estupidez. Tener un diploma te permite enseñar como profesor graduado. A mí no me interesa, y yo creo que eso hace más daño que ayuda. No enseñan a pensar creativamente. Solo enseñan destreza y habilidad, porque es lo único para lo que ellos están preparados. Uno puede tocar o no una serie de escalas, y si tus ideas son distintas a la opinión pública, ¿eres un fracasado? Cualquiera que emprenda un acto creativo parece que se encuentra fuera de los límites de lo correcto. Van a la escuela con la mente abierta, excitados con ganas de tocar, y se retiran amargados y no interesados en tocar.
Y una de las cuestiones que más llama la atención de la carrera de Ken Vandermark es la cantidad ingente de discos grabados, cantidad de discos y también de grupos en los que toca. En el caso de los discos habrá que saber las intenciones a la hora de publicar por parte de Ken Vandermark.
I mean, a lot of people have asked this and a lot of people seem dissatisfied in my response to the question, but to me, the whole thing is playing live, and that the music is a process art form, which means that there isn't there may be goals that you have, but to me, it all happens in performance on the bandstand, playing with musicians night to night, you know. That's why I like touring. That's why I like playing a lot of concerts. And a lot of the groups that I play with, I think I would like to document the work that we are struggling with. So the recordings are kind of documents of a point in time with the material that those bands worked with. So in the case of the Vandermark Five, I think it's our sixth record that's coming out. Well, that band's been together for 6 years. So that's one group out of, let's say, 10 or 12 or however many that I'm involved in pretty regularly. You know, to me, to document that particular group year to year is to show a timeline, an indication of how the ideas shifted in the band. It's a worthwhile set of indicators. But that's just one small part of what that band has done. You know, we played, I don't know how many, 100 whatever concerts over the course of that time. And those are the real, that's the real work, you know. So, to me, the criticism of you putting out too many records, you know, well, okay, don't buy them. I mean, you know, but it would be also to me to say, well, then I'm playing too many concerts, you know, because the records are just one small part of the process that I'm involved in. And I think it warrants documentation. And people may disagree, and that's totally fair, but if people are curious about why there's so many records, I play in a lot of different groups, and those groups are constantly evolving and developing and changing. And I think having a record of what we did at that point in time is worthwhile.
Para mí lo más importante es tocar en vivo. La música es un proceso de forma artística. Es posible que tengas metas, pero para mí todo sucede en el escenario, tocando noche tras noche. Por eso me gusta hacer muchas giras. Y las grabaciones son una especie de documento que refleja un punto concreto de un periodo con el material con el que trabajamos. Con los Vandermark Five, por ejemplo, vamos a editar ahora el sexto trabajo, y es uno de los 10 o 12 grupos con los que estoy involucrado. Documentar con grabaciones a ese grupo nos permite ver cómo las ideas cambiaron. Pero en realidad es solo una pequeña parte de lo que la banda hace. No sé cuántos cientos de conciertos hemos dado. La crítica de lanzar demasiados discos, bueno, si no les gusta, no los compren. Es como si alguien me criticara por hacer muchos conciertos. Los discos son solo una pequeña parte del proceso de lo que hago. Y creo que merece ser documentado. Y si quieren saber por qué grabo tantos discos, yo trabajo en muchos grupos diferentes que cambian constantemente, y creo que tener un disco de lo que hicimos en cada momento tiene su valor.
Las reflexiones de Ken Vandermark en este programa de hoy miércoles, entrevista, reflexiones de madrugada tras el concierto del pasado sábado en la ciudad de Huesca, en el Centro Cultural El Matadero. Ya hemos comentado con las traducciones de nuestro colega chileno Roberto Barahona de el programa Puro Jazz de Radio Beethoven de Santiago de Chile, www.purojazz.com, y escuchando además de fondo, no es la mejor de las condiciones, por supuesto, pero nos sirve para acentuar, si cabe, las palabras de Ken Vandermark, esa edición limitada de ese trío con Pals Nielsen Love y Nate McBride, Ken Vandermark. Siguiente cuestión que se le plantea, una de las habituales discusiones, la diferencia entre el jazz norteamericano y el jazz europeo. En su caso, ha colaborado con músicos de la talla del sueco Mats Gustafsson. ¿Notará Ken Vandermark las diferencias geográficas a la hora de entender la música entre Europa y Estados Unidos?
Well, I think in huge, like in a huge generalization, there are differences between the way American players tend to play as opposed to European players. But I think that those generalizations are really problematic because right now I think it's a lot more about the way certain individuals play. You know, that like I heard you mention Mats Gustafsson, for example. Okay, well, Mats is part of the Swedish scene. He's a very important part of that scene. But he doesn't represent the way that that whole scene works. You know, I mean, if you look at Sten Sandell and Raymond Strid and the work that the three of them did in the group Gush, yeah, it seemed like, oh, that was a Swedish way of playing free improvisation. But if you listen to those guys work outside of that group and work with different musicians that are also playing free improvised music in Stockholm and in Sweden, Yeah, there's certain relationships there, but the way Mats plays is the way Mats plays. You know what I mean? And I think that's true in the United States too. I mean, you could say, okay, Americans tend to be more interested in groove-oriented playing, like stuff with a beat and this and that. But then if you look at the work of like Joe Maneri or his son Matt Maneri, I would say, well, yeah, they're interested in that, but in a much more abstracted, opaque way than, let's say, me, when I play that kind of stuff with a beat, you know. They strip it out and move it around more. So I think that there are differences, but I think from my personal standpoint now, the reason I play with European musicians and American musicians is not so much like I'm seeking to bridge the gap between these cultures or anything, because even within Europe you have so many different cultural differences from country to country in the way that musicians play. And then within the countries they play differently. It's more about individuals who are interesting to work with. And so whether they're in Chicago or they're in New York or Stockholm or, you know, wherever they are, it doesn't matter to me. It's more the issues of geographical distance have shrunk more and more. So it used to be, you know, you'd play with people who lived in your city. Well, now, you know, you play with people who live in your country or you play with people who live on the other side of the water. It doesn't matter so much. It's more about finding the right people who can communicate with you. And, you know, it costs some money to fly to Oslo, but who cares, man? It's like if you have people there that are worth playing, then let's go and let's play. Let's do the music. And so I think that the people that I tend to play with are people who have a similar viewpoint. It's not like, oh, I want to play with Ken because he's an American. They don't give a shit about that, you know? And frankly, it's probably in despite of the fact that I'm American. So, you know, I think that it's more a bunch of people in the world now around, you know, let's say middle 40s to middle 20s. I sort of see that group of people being very open to playing together, aren't so concerned about, well, is it free improvised music, or are you playing tunes, or are you playing with a beat, or are you playing a melody? They want to just play music. And they're not so consumed by this issue of, like, is it jazz or not? I think they're a lot more interested in integrating musical elements that are outside of jazz that just interest them. You know, and so like if you look at like for me example, like with different projects I do, each of the projects has different elements that are musically interesting to me, and most of them include elements that are outside of strict the jazz history, you know. And I think that's much, much, much more common now than it was, let's say, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, especially, where people were making dividing lines like this is what we're doing. Like, for example, like the English guys being so severely breaking away from the American tradition to define their own personality. And they made this huge break and amazing innovative developments. Though that kind of thing isn't as common right now because people are kind of integrating all these ideas and finding ways for them to work together as opposed to finding their own special space, you know.
Generalizando, puede haber diferencias en la manera en que los músicos americanos tienden a tocar con respecto a los europeos, pero pensarlo así es problemático. Lo importante es la manera en que los individuos tocan. Por ejemplo, has mencionado a Mats Gustafsson. Mats es parte de la escena sueca, pero él no representa la manera en que esa escena trabaja. Si miras a Stenson y al grupo Gas, parecería que esa era la manera sueca de tocar free. Podía haber una cierta relación, pero la manera en que toca Mats es absolutamente personal. Y eso también sucede en Estados Unidos. Podrías pensar que los americanos se enfocan de una manera similar en torno al groove, ritmo, armonía, melodía. Pero si escuchas, por ejemplo, a Joe Maneri o a su hijo Matt Maneri, de acuerdo, puede que ellos también lo hagan, pero de una manera más abstracta. Si lo comparas con mi manera de tocar esa música, es posible que ellos lo desmenucen y lo muevan más. Al tocar con músicos tanto europeos como norteamericanos, es como si intentara disminuir la brecha entre estas culturas. Dentro de Europa, cada país tiene unas diferencias culturales, a la vez que cada país tiene las suyas propias. Pero yo estoy más interesado en trabajar con individuos. No me importa si están en Chicago, en Nueva York, en Estocolmo. Las diferencias geográficas han disminuido. Antes trabajabas con gente de tu ciudad. Ahora trabajas con gente de tu país o con gente que vive al otro lado del charco. Ya no importa tanto. Se trata de encontrar la gente adecuada para comunicarte. Y claro, cuesta dinero para viajar a Oslo, pero si allá está la gente adecuada para tocar, vamos y tocamos. La gente con la que tiendo a tocar tiene un punto de vista similar. No quieren tocar conmigo porque sea norteamericano. Les importa un carajo. Les importa tocar música sin importarles si esto es jazz o no. Les interesa integrar elementos musicales que están fuera del jazz, pero que les interesen. Por ejemplo, cada uno de mis proyectos tiene elementos musicalmente interesantes para mí y que en muchos casos están fuera de lo que es estrictamente la historia del jazz. Y eso es hoy mucho más común que hace 30 años, cuando la gente dividía los géneros. Los ingleses, por ejemplo, estaban preocupados por separarse de la tradición americana para definir su propia personalidad. Desarrollaron proyectos asombrosamente innovadores. Eso ya no es tan común. La gente trata de integrar todas las ideas para tocar juntos en vez de crear sus propios espacios exclusivos.
Pregunta Made in Fans, aquellos aficionados a la música de Ken van der Mark que quieren saber qué es lo próximo, y es que es una imparable carrera con proyectos que surgen cada día casi a la vuelta de la esquina. Uno de los próximos proyectos nos lo chivaba nuestro colega de Albacete, Antonio Martín, ese proyecto de saxofón solo, ya lo que nos faltaba por ver en Ken van der Mark.
That record got recorded in August, and it should be coming out hopefully by the end of April on Oka Disc, and that's the first solo record I've done, and I was trying to struggle with the idea of doing that for a long, long time, and I think I found some ways that for me personally hopefully sound like me and hopefully don't sound like me trying to play like Evan Parker, for example, or Anthony Braxton, for example, or Peter Brotzman, or Mats Gustafsson. You know, it's hopefully a personal take on solo reed music. So that's a new thing, but I mean, I'd be interested in doing more solo concerts. I've only done that in Chicago, and it's very sporadic, but to be frank, I'm much more interested in working with other musicians and collaborating with them, either, you know, in a small group or whatever, a large group. So I'll be focusing more still on doing that. And there's, in terms of new things, there's a trio with Paul Nelson Love and Nate McBride that I hope I'll be able to do more work with when Paul is better. And that's a new thing. And then I'm going to try to sustain a lot of, you know, the groups like the Territory Band and then the Vandermark Five. And hopefully DKV will be able to do more stuff in Spaceways and School Day. I mean, there's a lot of groups that have been going on in the Brotzman Tentet, Chicago Tentet. My hope is to be able to sustain the most viable groups in terms of their creativity. Like the Vandermark Five, for me, has been a very viable group. You know, we've been together for a long time. There's been very little personnel change. And from my standpoint, the band keeps changing and developing because of the individuals in the group and my own ideas shifting and changing. And I would like to continue that group for as long as possible because it's an amazing marking point for my own ideas, and I think also the people in the band's development as well. And as long as that's possible, I'd like to sustain those groups. That being said, I'd like to be able to also work on new projects. I'd like to be able to do more work with Paul Litton and Paul Lovens, and then, you know, other musicians as well. There's a trio with Ingeborg Tolkerflaten and Håvard Vik, two Oslo musicians, and with me just playing clarinet and bass clarinet, piano and bass. So it's a very acoustic sounding group, somewhat related to the work of the Jimmy Drucker Trio. And I'd like to do more with that group. So I'd like Blay and Swallow. Yeah, it's loosely connected to that. And so I'd like to keep sustaining the things that are really interesting and hopefully have them continue to grow and then integrate newer things in there too to keep my head, you know, unstable.
So before you do totally improvisations or some compositions?
Oh, the solo music. It's kind of like using templates. It's material, but they're not strict compositions. Like, this is the way the melody line goes. Or this. It's more character studies, like sonic character studies. So on the record, what I've done is I've put, I think there's 13 pieces that ended up on the record. And then there's about another five. Like, I did 13... I recorded it at home in the living room because it has good acoustics. And then with Malachi Richter, who does a lot of stuff in Chicago, records a lot of things. And then I did a live concert between the 2 days that I recorded at home. And I want to put five versions of these same pieces in the live context to hopefully show what I mean about them having a specific character, but also being extremely fluid in the way that I can interpret them. So issues of like the way the acoustics in the room sound, or the way I feel that day, and all these things can really affect the way the music gets played. So thematically, like some of the tunes have melodic material, but the melodic material isn't written down. It's more a reinterpretation of a character or a feeling, you know. So it has specific material, but it's extremely fluid in the way that I interpret it, which has been successful for me in dealing with the issue of trying to do solo music. Because with solo, I mean, the thing with solo is there's nothing to it's you're working off yourself. So I was trying to come up with a way to work off of the acoustics in the room and a specific idea, so it wasn't so strict, you know, of like, it has to sound this way. You know, because in general, it's when I'm playing with musicians, I can work off of them. Like tonight with Kent and Paul, it's like if I'm struggling, I can lean on them to help me get out of a problem or give me a solution to a problem. When you're playing solo, you have no one else to look to, and that's the real struggle of it, you know.
El disco de saxo solo lo grabé en agosto y todavía está por editar. Saldrá probablemente a fines de abril en el sello Oka. Es mi primer solo. Tenía esa idea hace tiempo. Intento sonar como yo. No yo intentando sonar como Evan Parker o como Anthony Braxton o Peter Brotzman o Mats Christensen. Es un enfoque personal. Me interesaba hacer más conciertos en solo y solo lo he hecho en Chicago esporádicamente, aunque me interesa trabajar con otros músicos. En nuevos proyectos hay un trío con Pals Nielsen Love y Nate McBride, con quienes quiero trabajar más. Quiero mantener muchos de los grupos, la Territory Band, los Vandermark Five, con el LKB espero hacer más cosas, con el Brotzman Tentet. Espero mantener los grupos más creativos como los Vandermark Five. Hemos estado juntos largo tiempo y con pocos cambios de nombres. La banda sigue teniendo ideas cambiantes y con mis propias ideas. A pesar de esto, también me gustaría trabajar con nuevos grupos y músicos. Quiero trabajar más con Paul Litton y otros músicos. Tengo también un trío con dos músicos de Oslo, con los que tocaré clarinete bajo, piano y contrabajo. Es un grupo muy acústico y que se relaciona de alguna manera con lo que hizo el Jimmy Giuffre Trio. Y de alguna manera quisiera hacer más con ellos y con Blaze también. Quiero mantener aquello que es verdaderamente interesante y que aporta nuevas cosas para mantener mi cabeza estable. Ah, del proyecto Saxo Solo, la música no funciona en base a una melodía concreta. Es más un estudio de caracteres de sonido, de personalidades. En el disco creo que he puesto 13 piezas y hay como otras 5 más. Hice 13 que grabé en casa porque tiene una buena acústica y después grabé en concierto entre los días que grabé en casa. Quiero poner 5 versiones de estas mismas piezas en el concierto en vivo, esperando que demuestren que aún teniendo un carácter específico, pueden influir en la manera de interpretarlas. Todo puede afectar, la acústica de ese día, como yo me encuentre. Temáticamente, algunas de las piezas tienen material melódico, pero no está escrito. Es más una reinterpretación de un sentimiento. Tiene material específico, pero fluye en la manera en que lo interpreto. Lo que sucede en solos es que eres tú trabajando con tus ideas. Mi idea era intentar una manera de trabajar con las acústicas de las piezas. Cuando trabajas con otros músicos, trabajas también con sus ideas y ellos te pueden ayudar a resolver un problema. Cuando trabajas solo, no tienes ningún apoyo y esa es la gran lucha.
Música como lenguaje internacional que une a los mundos. Quizá en los tiempos que corren, especialmente en estos días, algunos en este planeta Tierra debieran escuchar más música.
Well, things are so screwed up right now that I think any time there's something that provides a respite from that or a chance to pull yourself out of that for just a minute, or to give you some optimism about the human race, to be blunt about it too, is a really positive and a necessary thing. It's a really dark time right now, and hopefully we're gonna hopefully the United States will slow down and not jump into some real huge mistakes. So I feel that the arts are, you know, music and other art forms are really crucial right now, because I know that those are the things I lean on to keep me hopeful about people, you know, because so many things are so sad and screwed up that, you know, these kinds of things, we need optimism right now. And so if music is something that allows people to find that in this period, then I'm very proud to be trying to do that, because hopefully we're contributing instead of doing something negative. And right now we don't need anything else negative, you know.
Las cosas están tan jodidas ahora. Creo que algo que proporciona un descanso de eso, una oportunidad de salirse de ahí, aunque sea por un minuto, o darte optimismo sobre la raza humana, es algo positivo. Vivimos una época muy oscura y espero que Estados Unidos vaya más lentamente y no se lance a un enorme error. Creo que las artes son cruciales, son las cosas en las que yo me apoyo para mantener mi esperanza en la gente. Cuando peor están las cosas, más optimismo necesitamos. Y si la música permite a la gente mantener su esperanza, entonces estoy orgulloso de ser parte de eso y espero estar contribuyendo en vez de hacer algo negativo. No necesitamos ahora nada más negativo.
Reflexiones de Ken van der Mark que nos han llevado a sobrepasar nuestro tiempo de radio, pero creo que era un día interesante e importante poder tener con nosotros en voz a uno de los más grandes creadores de nuestros tiempos, con alguna de los nuevos sonidos que hemos podido presentar de esa grabación que en edición limitada nos entregaba Ken van der Mark, o le entregaba más concretamente nuestro amigo DJ PT al pasado miércoles. Nos vamos yendo ya. Antes de nada, reiterar el agradecimiento tanto a Roberto Barahona, nuestro compañero de PuroJazz.com, Radio Beethoven de Santiago de Chile, como a Diego Sánchez Cascado por la ayuda en la traducción, en el caso de Roberto Barahona, con la voz incluida, que ha sido la voz en castellano de Ken van der Mark. DJ PTA, bueno, pues ha sido una bonita experiencia, la que compartimos el pasado sábado con Ken van der Mark, y creo que, bueno, habrá tiempo para quejarse un poquito más de la situación cultural que tenemos en nuestro entorno.
Pues sí, la verdad es que lo del pasado sábado, además de descubrir a tres magníficos músicos, yo creo que descubrimos también a dos fantásticas personas.
Pues sí, dos fantásticas personas, como eran el propio Ken van der Mark y también su contrabajista Ken Kessler, con el que luego estuvimos también altas horas de la madrugada del pasado sábado. Bien, fantástico concierto, fantástica la compañía de nuestros amigos de toda la península ibérica, fantástico recibimiento de Paco Fonzi y de Jesús Moreno en Huesca. Esperamos corresponderles con visitas futuras si es que alguna vez tenemos buenos conciertos aquí en nuestra comunidad. En fin, rápidamente recordamos, mañana a las 11 de la noche en el local Las Cabañas.